Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. It has been ages almost since the last time we had a show. I know, if you only knew the situations and the problems that have arrived since we have not been on the air. There's nothing wrong with anything. Well, there is things wrong. There's a lot of injustices going on here in Louisiana. But there's nothing wrong with the radio show. It's just that I just haven't had a chance to get to it. As you know, you guys, you know I'm always doing something. And first, for all you new listeners, I did not even introduce myself. I apologize, and I'm going to have to get in the habit of doing that. I am Felita McCall, and I am the host of Say Your Peace Radio Show on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. And you guys, whew, in the last couple of months, so much has happened. In December, I lost a co-host, a dear friend, a brother, well, I used to say, from another mother. And I'm still trying to reel from that, trying to move on from that. Lots of people are probably familiar with him. Matter of fact, he did my Saturday shows with me. He hosted my Saturday shows on here with me, and I also hosted a local radio show with him. Brian K. Coleman Sr. passed away on December 9th. So I'm still trying to, like I keep saying, I'm trying to grasp the concept. Since he's been gone, so much has happened. So many things have taken place, and I don't have that person that I can call at any time and talk to them and tell them what's going on and him helping solving some problems and, you know, taking headway into some situations. So it's me right now. And the momentum is gathering, and that's the best part about of this whole situation. The momentum is gathering to the point where it is making headway on at least getting the message out there. Tonight we will be, and I'm going to attempt to get her on the phone. We'll be talking to Miss Eva Braxton, or we call her Eva Curry. She is a mother of a young gentleman who just got sentenced to life. The problem is he is a mental disabled person. And he was not served with a fair trial. I had a chance to witness the sentencing, and it amazed me. The Louisiana justice system is sad. It's sad and pathetic, and I don't know if people are really listening to our cry about so many of the injustices that are going on in our system here in Louisiana. And we'll get that opportunity to be able to make sure that we can see if there's some headway. I mean, it's got to be something that has to take place in order for I don't know. I get floored for words because I'm amazed at the idea that the help should be there, but it's not. The idea that I'm not going to say no one is helping fight the battles. I would not want to say that. But I will say that more people need to come. We need to come together and see that justice is served in every way it can. I'm sorry. I'm so overwhelmed of the fact that our children are being led down a path of destruction in every way that's possible. And that's the sad part about it. I have a son. I have a son. My son's 30 years old. And every day I worry that he's not falsely accused of something and wind up in this terrible, terrible judicial system of Louisiana. And me being who I am, the troublemaker, it would not look too well if he gets caught up in anything. But he's a good kid, and he's a good, he's not a kid, he's a grown man. He's a good person, and it's just a fear of mine. And I don't know if any other woman thinks of that, knowing that their son's, you know, doing good in his life, not, you know, nothing going wrong, but anything can happen. And not to say that he would not be prepared. It's just the ideal that I witnessed a young man being told that even though we don't have evidence showing that you did anything wrong, someone has to pay. And life plus 20 years, he's 24 years old now, 25, and he's gone. But we understand that there is a thing called appeals, and hopefully everything works itself out. We'll be able to get to that point where the appeals actually can take place. I'm going to attempt to see if I can contact Miss Eva real quick here. Guys, I'm kind of rusty with this, so hold tight, okay? Give me 1 second here. Let's see. In the meantime, I also have her aunt that we'll be talking to later on this week. I'm going to schedule so she can tell you her version of what took place and how it has impacted the family. Just 1 second here, you guys.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet. Goodbye.
All right. As you can see, she must be busy. I'll call her back in a few minutes. In the meantime, you guys, I am going to play you some music, and we sit back, relax. We've got a long conversation. We've got a lot of information to give out. This is Salita with Say Your Peace Radio Network.
Yeah. for the man that you are. You know how to treat a woman the way you are. You're a real man, a real cool daddy.
Super bad.
A loser. Everyone hates you. Why don't you just stay in your car and keep driving? I'm serious. Drive until you run out of gas and get out of your car and walk until you find someone who doesn't think you're dumber than bricks. Could take a while, but at least all that walking might burn a couple of calories.
You may not witness bullying like this every day. Your kids do. They want to help, but they don't know how. Visit StopBullying.gov to learn safe, simple ways your child can help stop bullying. Be more than a bystander at StopBullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
All right, you guys, we are back, and I'm still waiting on to contact Miss Braxton. I had called her earlier, and she was in the middle of doing something. So hopefully before the show's over, we can definitely get her on. If not, like I said, I have plenty more shows to get her on. But this is a very important show. It's something that needs to be said, and something that you guys need to understand. Louisiana, I shake my head. I'm not right now too proud of being a Louisianian. I'll say it to you like that. I'm not too proud at this moment. I have several different instances and situations that are dealing with the judicial system that we're going to talk about. I'm going to try to line them up, and a lot of this stuff is from my memory. I don't have to write it down because I've been dealing with it for a while. And some I've probably discussed this before, but there will be some new information, hopefully, that I can share with you guys tonight. First of all, I want to read you a little bit from an article from NOLA.com. It's from the Times-Picayune, and it's an article written by Cindy Chang, and I think she wrote this on May 13th, 2012. And she states that Louisiana is the world's prison capital. Okay, she says that Louisiana is the world's prison capital. The state imprisons more of its people per head than any of its U.S. counterparts. First among American means, first in the world. Louisiana's incarceration rate is nearly five times Iran's, 13 times China, and 20 times Germany. Now, those are some numbers, you guys. The hidden engine behind the state's well-oiled prison machine is cold, hard cash. A majority of Louisiana inmates are housed in for-profit facilities, which must be supplied with a constant influx of human beings, or $182 million industry will go bankrupt. Let me repeat that again so you understand what was just read to you. It says that a majority of Louisiana inmates are housed in a for-profit facility, which must be supplied with a constant influx of human beings or a $182 million industry will go bankrupt. Now, I don't know how you see that or how you perceive that, but that really sounds like slavery, slave trade, slave markets. When there was no more slaves, a lot of plantations could not survive. That's what that just said to me. I mean, that's what I got out of that. Maybe it's just me. Could be just me. But that's what I just got out of that, is that it's equivalent to a plantation. Once the slaves were freed, a lot of plantations could not survive because their moneymaker was gone. Now, it says several homegrown private prison companies command a slice of the market. But in a uniquely Louisiana twist, most prison entrepreneurs are rural sheriffs who hold tremendous sway in remote parishes like Madison, Avoyelles, East Carroll, and Concordia. A good portion of Louisiana law enforcement is financed with dollars legally skimmed off the top of prison operations. I want to repeat that too. It says that most prison entrepreneurs are rural sheriffs who hold tremendous sway in remote parishes like Madison, Avoyelles, East Carroll, and Concordia. A good portion of Louisiana law enforcement is financed with dollars legally skimmed off the top of the prison operations. That is deep. If the inmate count dips, sheriffs bleed money. Let me say this again. If the inmate count dips, sheriffs bleed money. Their constituents lose jobs. The prison lobby ensures this does not happen frothing nearly every reform that could result in a fewer people behind bars. So think about that when you think about the ideal that we're legalizing marijuana. Because a lot of these people that are locked up are for nonviolent crimes. So think about the change in their population once everybody goes legalized marijuana. It says, meanwhile, inmates subsist in bare bones conditions with few programs to give them a better shot at becoming productive citizens. Each inmate is worth $24.39 a day in state money. And sheriffs trade them like horses, unloading a few extras on the colleagues who has openings. A prison system that leased its convicts as plantation labor in the 1800s has come full circle as it again has its nexus. It says here, a prison system that leased its convicts as plantation labor in the 1800s has come full circle and is again a nexus for profit. Goes back to the concept of slavery. In the past two decades, Louisiana's prisons population has doubled, costing taxpayers billions, while New Orleans continue to lead the nation in homicides. One in 86 adult Louisianians is doing time, nearly double the national average. Among black men from New Orleans, one in 14 is behind bars. One in seven is in either prison, on parole, or on probation. Crime rates in Louisiana are relatively high, but that does not begin to explain the state's number one ranking year after year and the percentage of residents it locks up. So they're saying there's some kind of way this is not adding up. In Louisiana, a two-time car burglar can get 24 years without parole. A trio of drug convictions can be enough to land you at a Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola for the rest of your life. Almost every state lets judges decide when to mete out the severest punishment and when a sympathetic defendant should have a chance at freedom down the road. In Louisiana, murderers automatically receive life without parole on the guilty votes of a few as 10 of a 12 jurors. The lobbying muscle of the sheriffs, buttressed by a tough-on-crime electorate, keeps these harsh sentencing schemes firmly in place. So that goes back to what I just experienced Friday when an inmate, a young man who's now an inmate, just got sentenced for life and 20. Mr. James Harris is his name. He is a mental disabled young man that just got sentenced to life plus 20. That right there said exactly what just took place. Okay. Every dollar spent on prisons is a dollar not spent on schools. Using tactics known in policy circles as smart on crime, compared with the national average, Louisiana has a much lower percentage of people incarcerated for violent offenses and is much higher percentage behind bars for drug offenses. perhaps a signal that some nonviolent criminals could be dealt with differently. I said that earlier. Nonviolent offenses. So think about it. If we go ahead and legalize marijuana in the state of Louisiana, just a minute, you guys. Hey, I'm getting ready to call you. Did you hear me? I said I'm getting ready to call you.
Okay.
Okay, you guys, I'm sorry. She just called me on the cell phone. Okay, that's Miss Eva Braxton, and we're getting ready to talk to her. I want to finish this up before we go to a break and I get her in. Okay. It says, where did I leave off at? Okay. It says, now, I'm going to go back and quote what this, I think this is a Wharton, the Wharton of Angola stated. Something has to be done. It just has to be done about the long sentences, says Angola Wharton Burl Kane. Some people you can let out of here that won't hurt you and can be productive citizens, and we know the ones who can't. So that says that a Wharton made a decision or knows in his mindset that this is crazy and that there is hope and that there is help. If we could just stop doing this. So he's admitting that we got too many people in here. But he's got to do his job. Now, do all Louisiana's 40,000 inmates need to be incarcerated for the interests of punishment and public safety to be served? Our dear old Governor Bobby Jindal. Oh. He is a whole nother show, you guys. A conservative Republican with presidential ambition says answer is no. Despite locking up more people for longer periods, than any other state, Louisiana has one of the highest rates of both violent and property crimes. Yet the state shows no signs of weaning itself off its prison dependency. Now, let me tell you a little story about Bobby Jindal. Bobby Jindal loves privatization. He'll privatize you. He'll privatize me. He'll privatize your children. That's just who he is. Okay? He comes from the Department of Health and Human Resources, and he's what we used to call a bean counter. Okay? He's about the dollar bill. He's about the political ambitions that he has, and he is about scratching his best friend and his buddy's back. And if it's at the rate of someone being locked up or somebody being sold, that's fine with him. It doesn't bother him. And I'm so glad he's at his last term that he cannot run again. I am so glad. But he has made such of a mess of Louisiana in its policies and procedures that it'll be somebody, whoever comes in next, have to really do a cleanup. If they were really wanting to clean up Louisiana, it's all about who you know here. It's not about what you know, and your knowledge is about who you know. And I've learned that since I've been here, and it amazes me. Okay, it says you have people who are so invested in maintaining the present system, not just the sheriff, but judges, prosecutors, other people who have links to it. Says Burke Foster, a former professor at the University of Louisiana Lafayette and an expert on Louisiana prisons. They don't want to see the prison system get smaller. I lost where I was at. I'm sorry, you guys. Smaller. Or the number of people in custody reduced, even though the crime rate is down because the good old boys are linked together in the punishment network, which is good for them financially and politically. Okay, think about that. Now, I'm going to continue, but I'm going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and I'm going to have Miss Eva Braxton, or you can say Miss Eva Curry, on the line.
Let me go.
Take
asking, but I'd rather not send you nude pictures. I'm camera shy. I already said no. Under my clothes, I'm a robot. My webcam is broken. I'm worried they'll get passed around school. I have a rash. I have nudophobia. I have lizard skin. I'm a vampire, so I don't show up in pictures anyways. Your badgering has really killed the mood.
When someone is pressuring you to do something you don't want to, how many ways can you say no before they get the message? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
All right, you guys, we're back. I'm going to attempt for the third time to call Miss Braxton again, you guys. Just a second.
Hello.
Hello, Miss Braxton. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
All right, all right. You guys, this is Miss Eva Braxton, and what I'm going to let her do is we're going to get back to the article about Louisiana prisons, but I want her to get her story out. And we're going to find out some real good information, and we're going to find out some sad information at the same time. So what I want her to do is I want her to first start out by telling us about her son, giving his name and talk about his circumstances and where he's at now, and then we're going to go into the case itself a little bit, and we're going to talk about circumstances that took place. So, Miss Eva, if you want to go ahead and get started, you may.
My son's name is James Lamar Harris.
Mm-hmm.
He came here to Louisiana on his way back from his trip to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he ran across a young lady that he met. Probably, I don't know if he's on the internet or anything like that, but because my son is special, he had a problem with memories and things with oxygen to his brain, so that caused a serious problem with his learning and being able to function like us on a regular basis.
Okay.
So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, sweetie.
So he pretty much got mixed up with some people that was using him for his money.
Okay. So what happened after that? And how old is he now?
He's 25, going to be 26.
Okay. Okay. So what happened at the – why are we even talking about your son at this moment?
Well, actually because – you know, Louisiana refused to give him treatment when he came down here. They refused to put him in school because of the parents of him and because he's supposed to go to a special education school with special people. They looked at him as a normal person, but actually he was brain damaged, so he needed to be with those type of people because he had to constantly have exercise with his brains and learning things all over again, just the basic things, you know, with keeping himself up, you know, learning things where that he can function on a regular basis. But, you know, at a period of time, he lose all his memories and things, so he had to be refreshing all over again. But when he came to Louisiana, you know, they looked at him and said that he didn't need medication and all that type of stuff. You know, he didn't have to come to the doctor or anything. And when he came back here, like in 2011, from being abducted by a lady off the internet, you know, I put him in the mental health place to get him medication so he won't wonder a lot. And then they would not let you explain about his past history on his medical condition. And then, you know, they don't want you talking about anything. They like for him to explain stuff himself, where that he wasn't able or capable explaining what happened to him as a child and why he has a mental disability.
Okay.
So prior to coming back here, you know, he got picked up by this young lady, mother, Denise Miller, and Porter Miller up in Memphis, Tennessee, Carly said going to swindle him out of his money and things, you know. And after his money was gone, they put him out in the street. He became homeless. And then the young lady took him over to her place of residence, which she was staying out of a nasty, empty, abandoned store with rats and rodents and all type of things, living up in there with them. And she decided to follow him here with them, this sick baby. And Louisiana refuses to give her medical attention at the time. We had to take her to emergency to get some medicine for this bronchitis or something that she was having in her lung, problem breathing. And then, you know, LSU saw her in January for all this here fungus all over her body. And then she had a big swollen up stomach that was a problem with that. So they were giving her medication because the doctor said she had a bad virus and a fungal infection, you know, bacterial infection.
Mm-hmm.
But the mother refused to let us take her to the doctor when we mentioned about some parasites could be possibly in her, you know, in her feces. So after we had discovered that there's a possibility that the baby might be full of worms and things, the mother talked to her mom, and they refused to let us take the baby to the doctor. So all the appointments that we made for her baby, that she refused to take the baby. And when the baby died, you know, they said the kids, you know, beat the baby in the stomach, which her stomach was already swollen up, you know, and the doctors never checked her for sure to even see if she even had parasites. And a lot of doctors didn't want to touch her or deal with her because they used excuses about they had 1 or 2 months waiting period. They're not taking Medicaid and things, you know, because with this Obama thing, they decided not to give us a lot of medical attention with the Medicaid by turning us down.
Okay. Go ahead. Finish telling the story.
So it was hard to get her a doctor, and because of Medicaid and the Obama thing like that, all the doctors that we were sent to refused to see us, so they had a lot of excuses about taking patients of color. But then when other people of another race had Medicaid or something like that, they opened to take them in right away. So the baby died during the process of not getting checked out for the parasites, and the parents was accused of actually killing the baby or beating her in the stomach when actually she had problems before she came here because her mother was in a lot of abusive things with her mom, you know, fighting back and forth with her mom and things. Then getting into it with people in the streets, you know, them going out fighting other people, you know. So she had a lot of violence in her life while she was carrying that baby. And well, she wasn't carrying the baby because the baby was violent herself.
Okay,
you know,
so
the justice system.
Go ahead.
I was saying that the justice system failed. You know, Louisiana failed to do their job as far as trying to help people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they turn you away when they find out that you are of a different race, you know. They don't want to give you the assistance that they should give you, like they give everyone else. Everyone should have the same treatment as other races. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And because of the lack of help from, you know, Louisiana, then you pretty much is on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened, they're ready to throw you in jail. You know?
Yeah.
And they don't want to hear nothing about no truth or anything, and that's what my problem is with the state of Louisiana, because when you ask for help, you know, they want to turn you down and look at you like, you know, we don't mean anything, but I have to let them know we are human beings just like everyone else, and we does not deserve to be treated the way we be treated, you know, because like I was explaining to them, when we say that we come here to the planet Earth, we can't say to God, you know, hey, God, don't send us down here to the planet, because if you send us down here with this here color on us, then the people of the white race is going to beat us and throw us in jail, so we don't get a chance to have that type of choice. So I told them, if we had a choice to say what color we come down here, we would ask the Lord not to send us down here this color if we're going to suffer.
Exactly, exactly. Now, tell me or tell us, the listening audience, about the different reports that you constantly reported, the people that you told with the problems that you were having with your son being incarcerated and being labeled a baby killer, because that's what they labeled him as. Tell them what he's been going through from the time he was, from the time he was locked up, from the time, excuse me, from his arrest until now.
Oh, the first time when he was arrested, by Stephen Phillips, you know, supposed to be taken in for questioning. But they knew that he was mentally challenged, so they decided to question him anyway without a lawyer, putting guns up against his head, telling him that us black folks always doing something. What did us black folks do to that baby? Because we know we did something to the baby and things. And my son was explaining to him that he didn't do anything. And my son kind of like was moving from those guns pointed up against his head and up on his shoulder. And then the officer told him if he flinched, they could kill him and get away with it. And I said that that was wrong, because no one deserves to be treated like that, especially when they're mentally challenged and you figure that you above the law, that you would take that in your own hand and matter, that you would coerce a person into saying that they did something that they didn't do, trying to frame them for a case to gain more people to put in their prison. And then when I had mentioned that to them, they tried to holler, you know, they were yelling and hollering at me to keep my mouth quiet, you know, so people won't hear in the office about what was going on, so they would raise their voice above me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that. And because when my son was put in the jail at the Rapid Parish Jail, he was brutally beaten all the time, hidden in his stomach, cut across his forehead and things, you know, having seizures and stuff like that up there, and they did nothing. You know, you have this big old warden where actually he's called, they call him, well, Mr. D. Brown. He's a Corporal D. Brown. So he pretty much do all the roughing up, you know what I'm saying? And I feel that that's not fair, because when you tell them that what they're doing to people up in there, then they want to make your child suffer even more, and that's not right, because prison is for the place where he was being held. It was not supposed to be a place of being beat and things like that. It was a place to have ordinance and not bring that stuff in there. But then when they call themselves taking it off the street, they put it in the jail and condoled it themselves, because that's just like saying they're criminals too, because they want to take crime stopping off the street, but you want to do the crime up in the jail. And that's not fair, because when you hit people in the stomach and they're mentally challenged and you know that they need assistance on a regular basis, then the state shouldn't make a person be normal like we are when they are not normally functioning to be like that. And when you tell them that your children are not normally functioning, they make you think that, hey, you know, this child can do this, this child can do this, you know what I'm saying? So it makes you look like you're the person that have the problem instead of your children. And then when they try to do something on their own and they're not capable of it, then they want to blame you for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you said, and we were talking about what, how would I say that? We're talking about the ideal that he was mistreated each time there was a report made on the incidents of the abuse. Now, tell me, list or tell us some of the people that you contacted to get help for your son.
Oh, I called it. The first people I called, the Advocate for the Disabled, and I explained to them about my son's disability and things, you know, and they said because of that, they cannot do anything. But I feel that when you have a mentally challenged a young adult, then it should be something that they can step in as far as advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
They should be able to advocate for a person, you know, even though it's not, even though they're not criminal lawyers, but they should be able to understand a person's disability, whether that way they can explain to the court the reason why come the person is not capable of doing things, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then because they did not do anything, you have to call, you know, like the Bobby Gentle, the government, you know, they have this thing in here for civil rights. I called them, and only thing they would tell me, oh, well, look, I called them and tell them that they're being watched. You know, why would you tell someone they're being watched and things? Because if they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing to a human being and violating their human rights, then that should be a place that should step in to look into that. But instead of them looking into that, they feel like saying, hey, look here, y'all. Okay, we know what y'all doing in there. So just keep it down a little bit. Keep it down. Because, you know, people watching what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of filing a complaint or letting them know that, hey, let us look into this. I called the FBI, and I let them know when my son was being beat and brutally beat. They tell me that, he has to do it on his own. If he's not capable of doing it on his own and he have a mind of a child, then he's not capable of dealing with things the way we can deal with or making reports and things. And they know that he can make reports because they're not going to let him. But then when you step in to defend or talk up for your young adult where you've been dealing with him all your life with these disabilities and struggling, you know, you come to Louisiana, you don't get any help at all. And then I turn around, I have to call the FBI on the FBI because they didn't want to do their job. You know, they say, oh, well, he doesn't have a mental problem. Schizoactivity is a mental problem. It's one of the most serious mental problems that there is above all of them because he have all of those mixed in one with the bipolar, you know, autism. You have schizophrenia, you have ADHD, you know, you have all of those varieties in that one, you know, so that's why they call it schizoactive, because he have a lot of activities of mental disorder due to the fact of losing oxygen to the brain, because the brain doesn't function like it's supposed to be function, and it has a problem, you know, keeping things focused or in order when he talks, you know, and you have to piece his words together, and a lot of times he will repeat what you say. So when people say stuff so much to him, then he begins to repeat that. And then they'll say, well, he said this and he said that. It's not the fact that he's saying that. It's because they have programmed his brain to say that.
Mm-hmm. So I
got in touch with the Justice Department as well.
Mhm. Okay. And what did they say?
And they wanted me to go through the procedures of normal procedures with Louisiana first, and then they would at the jail they would say that he's not in there because my son had a problem spelling his name correctly.
Yeah.
So when they tried to correct it, they would pretty much say that he's not in there or use excuse because my son, he say James, and he spelled it J-A-Y. Then he say me, James, because that's how it sounds to him. Instead of saying James, they would say, they called and asked for my son to see if he's in there. And the name, well, we don't have that name because they're saying Jamie. Because the jail has him as Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times they will have him mixed up, or he's in there or he's not in there. Then they don't know whether to believe me or not because they're covering themselves up in that jail.
Okay.
And that's a problem. You know, and nicely, look, the first time my son came here, he was having a relative move. And, you know, people tie up stuff instead of using proper things to put your things inside of, you know, boxes, containers and stuff like that. You know, people put stuff all in these here sheets and tie stuff up. You know, stuff falls out of things. And so my son happens to run across this gun he saw. So he turns the gun in. They get him for possession of a stolen gun. So why would you put him in jail for a possession of a stolen gun if he found one and he turned it in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they give him 2 years probation. 2 years probation for what? That wasn't a gun that he stole. He found it and he turned it in. And because he turned it in, called the police to turn it in, y'all lock him up for possession of a stolen gun? That didn't make no sense. And then his little friend had a little old dust of hemp that they he had done seen the little jump out boy coming around the corner. He grabs my son by the pocket, sticks it in his little pocket. I go to say, look, let me see what you put, what that boy put in your pocket, because I went to pick him up because he wanders a lot, you know. And here the jump out boys come because, you know, he's very easy to be influenced. Instead of being on medication, people want to give him to calm his nerves and stuff, you know, to keep him focused and right and things like that. And then they want to lock people up for herbs that's been around for years and centuries that the Native Americans use for the terminally mentally ill. And, you know, you have doctors use that for people that's terminally mentally ill. But then they want to say you're on illegal drugs, but they want to give you cigarettes that's drug and it says on the label, you know, from a Surgeon General, that is dangerous, that those cigarettes are dangerous. But they still sell that and they put it on the market, you know, causing people to have cancer and all that type of thing. And then they will give them alcohol. If you know alcohol is going to intoxicate a person, why would you sell it on the market to make money off of it when you know people can harm themselves as well as harming others? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. But you know what? We have to understand everything is set up in a system that's meant to happen. It's not a fluke. It actually, everything is set up to happen the way it happens. And we have to learn how to know what to do when it happens. Our problem, America, not America, let me break this down. Us black folks are too busy with everything else and don't think situations like what you have encountered and what your son is in right now, we're too busy living our lives to think that could happen to you, to happen to them. The problem is you're just one of the many millions, probably. It's 40,000 right now incarcerated and moving up, incarcerated in the state of Louisiana right now. We are the highest in the world with incarcerated people. And in Angola right now is overflowing with inmates, and majority of them is black. What we have to do is we have to educate ourselves on the law. Because when we don't know the law, they know we don't know the law, and they're going to take full advantage of it. And it's a system up.
Yes, yes. But then, you know, there's a lot of discrimination, too, you know, because when it comes to the fact of discriminating, you know, they said there's a law against discrimination. You know, when you lock up the majority of people of color, and then if you have these here Caucasian people doing the same thing and committing the same crimes as they say it is and things, and then you turn around, you pat your own Caucasian people on the head, tell them, look, Lord, don't do it, you know, give them a couple of years or give them some probation time or whatever. But then when they do the people of color like that, it's like throw their tails away and throw away the key. But, you know, they have to be fair towards people, because I noticed since I've been here in Louisiana, you know, you have judges that's not fair to people of color as well as the disabled people. And the disabled people, you know, they suffer the worst because they take advantage of them because they don't know. And when the judges do that, because I'm going to give you a good example, this judge, this here Caucasian Judge Cook. You know, this here young boy, he was mentally challenged severely with plugs out of his head and things, you know. And when he talked, that tells you right there that he don't know no better. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then when he wanted to own some land or some private property or whatever, instead of throwing him in jail to be raped and sodomized and all of that there, that's not the way you deal with people that's mentally challenged. Because there's a way, instead of throwing him in jail, he knew when she said that, this is her comment that she made, well, mother, he goes, he gets hard labor in jail. I didn't hear how much time he gets for one-on-one on property, but she said next time he take his medication, he won't have to deal with us. You know, that right there bothered me, because I started to jump up and tell her she knows she wrong for doing a mentally challenged. What if it was hers? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just can't treat people that's mentally challenged any type of way, and then the law or anybody won't step in. You have these advocacies for the disabled that should step in. You know what I'm saying? They should have people that should help them when they need help. They don't give these people the help that they need, or what they'll do, they get these payees, and then they'll put these people in these old nasty places and things, collect their little money and stuff, put them in these unsanitized places and stuff, because, you know, it's a roof over their head.
Exactly.
You know, and I feel like, you know, someone has to protect them.
But see, the problem is,
you can't just do them all kind of that.
Let's talk about the system itself. The state system is broken because we have a governor that's greedy. And when the state system is broken, so the parishes, since here in Louisiana, you guys, we have parishes. And since the parishes system is broken, because it all trickles down, then you have the state-owned facilities that are not properly maintained. And you have a lot of mental illness. You have to understand the budget for the state mental illness, and most states have been cut drastically. So there is no help for all of our mentally ill people. That's why they have them locked up in prison. And they're being abused in prison simply because of that. They don't belong in prison. But there's
I agree.
They make more money on us in prison than they'll make more money on us in the state-owned facility. That's just how it is.
Yeah, that's because they don't want to train them and give them the job and the proper job that they can, that they need to be able to be successful or survive, because they don't want to. They don't want to supply things for them to survive, you know, and that's why we have a lot of poverty going on. And then when they put our young men in the jail, like you had the prosecutor, Mike Shannon, you know, and then he get these here coroners to help them frame people, tamper with stuff, whether that way to build a case and things, you know, there's the law against that. Tampering stuff to frame people for murder, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You know, doing things themselves to the bodies of people and then saying that, okay, they did this here. Because they know no one's going to look into it, and then they think that some of us is not have the capability of knowing the difference between things. But see, they wrong, because we all are not like that.
Exactly.
You know, we have enough sense to know what be going on, because when we create things and we invent things and stuff like that, they steal it from us.
Yeah,
and they get the profit for something we've done.
Yep.
You know, we do a lot of inventing. That tells you right then and there we got to be smart and clever, because if we come up with a lot of inventions and then they turn around and then they claim it and get the profit off of it themselves,
yep,
then they're stealing, you know what I'm saying? They're stealing from us. Because we're not as dumb as they think they are. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back, okay?
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat. I'm stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with Say Your Peace Radio Network, and we're on the air, and we're speaking with Miss Eva Braxton. And we're talking about Louisiana, and like I named the show tonight, is Louisiana legally blind? From the evidence and the story Ms. Braxton is explaining to us about her son, Mr. James Lamar Harris, we're learning that the system is broken and that they are legally blind on purpose. I read earlier an article from the Times-Picayune, which is the New Orleans newspaper, and everything that she just said basically is what's summed up in that article I read earlier about how everybody's in on the take. It's easier to lock us up than to get us the help. They admitted that there are more nonviolent offenders locked up in Angola and in the prison system in Louisiana than they are violent criminals. So that tells you right there, and that's why I say again, if they ever legalize marijuana, Louisiana will lose a lot of money. Earlier in the article, it stated that the reason why is so many of us locked up is because if they don't, because we're sold out to the private industry, we have to admit it, we're sold, it's just like slavery, it hasn't changed any. They sold us out to the public market, to the private industry. And if they don't put people in those cells, if they don't keep those beds full, then the whole prison industry will lose. It's a $182 million industry will lose. They say they literally will go bankrupt if they start releasing people out of prison. So you think about just one person making a huge difference opposed to thousands of them. So that's why it's so easy to put a number instead of calling your name, because actually you're just a number to them. They don't see you as a human being anymore. It's good for y'all to get packed up in a prison cell together, so eventually somebody going to die because it's survival of the fittest. So a person who went in there with their mind right is not going to come out the same way. And especially when it comes to our black men. You guys have to realize this, and I say it all the time, wake up. You have to realize our kids are the target. There is a genocide going on with the American. I'm not going to even call our kids African American. I'm calling our kids black, especially our males. And the women are not far behind it. It's too many of us to them. It's too many of us. We've got to do something with them. After the Civil War, we couldn't do nothing with them. They wasn't going to go back to Africa. You know, they've been Americanized. We can't send them back to Africa. They're not going nowhere. We got to do something. So they started with eugenics. Then they started little by little on genocide, finding ways with birth control, the syphilis experiment they did. They killed a lot of them off. The Tuskegee. You got to look at that experiment. Any way that they can kill us off and get rid of us, that is what they're doing. And that's point blank. Now, Ms. Braxton, talk about the death threats that your son has encountered just because of who he was. You actually reporting to who you needed to report it to, did the property authorities. And just tell us about the threats that he has encountered since he's been in there.
Well, you know, he has had death threats and things like that. And, you know, he had a lawyer, like his first lawyer that he had. They called him Blaine Williams. And, you know, he had that boy's case while, like, about 2.5 weeks or might be 3 weeks, where that they found him dead after he was looking into the case and stuff because, you know, they give him drugs or whatever and things to let him do away with themselves so they don't have to do it. And then, like, they give my son this other lawyer, this James Rakrishan. Now, this James Rakrishan, he had the medical papers for the child that she was going to the doctor, you know, papers saying that, you know, the baby had problem with the stomach obstruction of the stomach. You know, she had, they gave this baby stuff for to treat the disease and things. But then they get this here, what they call these here, you know, people that kind of fix the word that they're not doctors, where they can say that, hey, this baby had a disease or whatever, because they don't know what the child had before the incident happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because she was on medication, the child was given medication that a two-year-old or a child under two should not have had, which could have made some problems, you know, with the child. And then, exactly. You know, you have this lawyer that did not even use none of the evidence that would prove that they didn't do anything. But then they took the word of this here coroner that didn't even know that we even had the medical papers and it proved that the baby had a disease because first thing they said, she didn't have a disease. But she, how you know she did? The medical papers that she had said she did have a disease. Or she didn't have bronchitis. How you gonna figure that she didn't have bronchitis when bronchitis is a chronic disease because they said she didn't have a chronic disease. But bronchitis is a chronic disease. Asthma is a chronic disease. You know, the fact about the parasites, you know. They tell you all the time to wash your hands. They tell the kids to wash their hands because of germs and bacteria. You know, that spread. You have parasites that we may be born with, and that's a natural thing. You have harmful parasites, and you have parasites that's not harmful. But then how would that coroner knew if the child had parasites because the baby was gone before he even knew that she even had parasites because she was never checked for it, no way. So they used all this lying to keep you from saying anything. So that way they should say, oh, well, the baby didn't have it. Well, if you're not going to give me a chance to explain myself and the only thing they want me to say is yes or no, how can I explain something if they're going to shut you up and keep you from talking? You know, and then, you know, you got these, like, for instance, this James Ward creature. You know, you have a mentally challenged person. Why would you take a person's head, turn it, and push it down into a picture of a cut-open child, all types of report and say, look at what you've done to a child when it's a possibility that parasites could have done this here. And the fact that they cause a lot of medical problems in people today that's not checked for it, and they say they don't know why a lot of people have medical problems or diseases. They don't know what the causes of them. That's because they don't look into parasites. Number one killer in the United States. Because you can go swimming and get parasites in the water and things. Mosquitoes can bite you. They give you malaria. They lay eggs in the skin and things like that, which gives you parasites. So, you know, the system really fails people because they fail to look into the truth and they want to look at things the way they want to look at it when they don't even have parasite doctors down here. And the things that they need for properly health, they don't have it and they don't have enough technology to have people check or test it for those because they kind of behind in a lot of things, you know? They didn't even know what an ultraviolet do.
Well, it might set the idea that it's set up that way. You ever thought about that?
Well, no, I look at it like if you're a doctor and you're going to practice medicine, then you should have all the techniques that you need when it comes to the human body, you know? Now, when kids get ringworms down here in Louisiana, they don't use ultraviolet blue light because ultraviolet blue light show up all kind of diseases on your body when you have it on the body. But because they don't have ultraviolet blue light, they can't tell what type of disease you have on your skin. Because they asked me, what was that? Oh, up north, they use all type of things because they have all kind of equipment to check children for diseases and things, you know, worms and parasites. When the doctor was told in April about seeing the parasites in the child's, Alicia's stool, Ted said, oh, she have a bad viral and then bacterial infection. Okay, we know that. Is it harmful? Is it something that can kill a child or whatever? You know, to check worms, is there a way that you can check? Well, we can put her in the hospital. Okay, put her in the hospital. But the mother did not want the child to go in the hospital. So we were between a hard rock and a plate. Then when we tried to take the child to the hospital ourselves for rectum, keep following up on the doctor, then they don't want us taking the baby to get checked out or anything. The mother don't from out of Arkansas, because they knew that baby was damaged on the inside, and they didn't want it to get exposed. So in the process of the child dying or whatever, the mother knew if the grandmother knew if her daughter was abusive to the child, then why didn't you tell someone that instead of saying, you know, fussing at your daughter that, you know, I'm going to tell that you beating on the baby. Okay, if you know the girl have a problem of beating on the baby, she's not going to do it around us.
No.
You know, well, and if she's doing things behind my son's back, how is he supposed to know if she's doing harm to her baby? She was jealous of her child and my son's relationship because he always wanted to take her out and socialize with other little children because she's been hemmed up in a nasty, empty, abandoned store that's not even worth living. And it was supposed to be boarded up. But you're living out of a nasty, empty, abandoned store, and you got your family living out of there, and then she could catch anything from rodents and smelling like rodent feces, you know? And then when we look into it, oh, don't let them do this. Don't let them do that. Listening to her mother caused her child to die. You know what I'm saying? And then my son had to be blamed for it. And then you got the neighbor, the grandmama, oh, that stays there, that's a family member. Okay, you right there at the house. You over there every day. You know the child sick, saying that the baby vomiting and throwing up. But then when the baby die or whatever, you do CPR and hit the baby in the stomach and then turn around and try to make it seem like they did it. You know, you have crooked folks in Louisiana, too, you know what I'm saying, to cover their own behind. And then that was something they didn't even look into because they told her she don't have to show up or whatever because this already been a done deal. Those kids sit in that jail for almost 2 years with them with the same old thing that they were trying to frame them for. But then the thing about it is, how you going to do a second autopsy on a child no sooner as the coroner get done with them? Didn't know that the child had been taken to the doctor for parasites, and the child is already shifted by the grandmother to Arkansas to keep her from getting a second autopsy. You know what I'm saying? Because that would have shown that the acrid peritonitis that she had in the stomach perforation possibility could came from those parasites eating on the inside of that baby's stomach. And no one doing anything about it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
The system failed the child. It's the system here in Louisiana failed the child themselves because they hear and see a little child with a disease and stuff on there, and they worried about the baby, worried about other kids catching this or that and things. And then you look around, and then you notice that they can't do any. They're not going to do anything. And then they don't want to check the child, don't want to put their hands on them because they're scared they might catch something. So the system failed that child. She'd been here for 4 months that she was here, and we tried to make her happy, you know, trying to let her see what it's like to be a child. But get clothes put on, clean her up, scrub her up and things, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then they turn around and they say, oh, we didn't do anything. We didn't try to help this child. Well, what do you think we did when we took her to the hospital? What they think we did when we took her to the clinic, you know what I'm saying? And when that child came here to Louisiana, that mother took a chance to bring that child here to Louisiana, that were her responsibility to make sure that baby continually to see the doctor, regardless of what her mother told her. But that goes to show you that the mother didn't have any sense herself, because she wasn't educated, because her mother was prostituting her, had her little siblings at home and things, being babysitted up in that old nasty, empty, abandoned store, no lights, no proper running water, and you raising a daughter up in the place with your grandchildren and your children because you can't take them to the Salvation Army shelter. There's a lot of places that can help people that are homeless, and my son decided to take in a homeless family that was pretty much part of my family down the line. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, I have a question.
And they think that...
I have a question for you. Okay, now, and then we're going to take another break. The question I have is, when you got the baby here and when you realized that she refused to take the baby to the doctors, why didn't you call Child Protective Services on her here? Instead of trying to handle the situation yourself, because you couldn't
I've been, you know, from being here, I didn't have too much a source of knowing things and places and numbers and things, because I mostly stayed in because I have an illness myself. And then when, you know, when she first came here, you know, in December, following up behind my son, getting her baby out of that store there. January, February, and in December, they were working on getting Medicaid cards because they told me what to do to get Medicaid for her to go to the doctor.
They were helping her.
And then, like, when it came to the fact of, like, April and May, the mother was pregnant with another baby. And it was
okay.
Like, you know, okay.
But the I'm asking you. You knew she wasn't doing the proper taking care of or of the baby, and you said yourself that she refused to take the baby to the doctor. Why didn't you then?
This was at the last minute.
What
when the grandmother found out that we were taking her to the doctor, then the grandmother of the child pretty much had her to try to depend on Miss Young, you know what I'm saying, so that way the father could come down here and get them and take them back to Arkansas and get help, you know,
I hear what you're saying, but listen to what I'm asking you, and I'm asking you this because
mm-hmm.
we need a clarification on the situation. Why didn't you, regardless, when she refused to take the baby to the doctor the very first time she did that, why didn't you call DHS on her?
Well, the first time when she refused to take the baby, she didn't take the baby to the doctor. It wasn't like she said, I'm not taking my baby to the doctor. She said she was sick and she didn't feel good. And at the time, we did not know that she was pregnant. So, you know, this is not something you just going to say, okay, this girl been here for 4 months, and she refused to take her baby to the doctor, because it wasn't that type of situation, you know, because
okay.
I could see it when she was here, and she wasn't taking her at all, but the baby was going to the doctor, but because she didn't have Medicaid and things, you have to go through proper procedures in order just trying to just turn somebody in, because then that would make you look like I'm trying to get the girl's baby taken from her. So I did not want to do that, because for the simple fact that there are procedures and there are agencies that tells you, okay, then there's the baby sick. You know, we can take the mother and the child to the doctor. But when we found out in 4 months that this girl is pregnant with another baby, you know, and this is my grandbaby, why would I want to put my grandbaby in the system along with the other child? Because you could tell the girl needed some help, you know, with the baby and stuff. But it wasn't nothing to actually report her, because it wasn't like it was an ongoing thing. It was just the fact that she was pregnant and her parents needed to come down here and help her out because we wasn't allowed to do that because they said that we wasn't on anything. You know, I could see that she was a type of person that you just meet off the street and you just in her business and saying she's not doing this and she's not doing that. Because during the prior time that she was here, her baby was seeing the doctor under my roof in my chair. We take her to the doctor. She's going to go with her mother. And we had her and the mother going to the doctor because at the time the mother could not get Medicaid. The baby was able to get Medicaid. The only thing that stopped me from taking her after the mother was sick and could not take her is because I was not on anything and neither was my son. And trying to turn somebody in within the month that she refuses to take the baby to the doctor and being sick and things like that is not something I want to, you know, I mean, you know, if there is other options besides putting, because she actually wasn't planning on staying here anyway. She came to visit, and her visit stayed a little longer and a little longer because she was fearing, she was afraid of her mother, and she did not want to go back to that store, and I can understand that. So I'm not just going to say, hey, look, she's neglecting her child and she's doing this here, because you know what? I applauded her for getting her child out of that store and coming out of that place with her child and doing the process of her getting her child out of there. She was, the baby did go to the doctor. The baby did, she was, Social Security was trying to help them and assisting us in where to go to get assistance for the baby. So I don't think people would have liked that. Okay, you're going to turn the child in without even trying to help. That would be some crucial stuff. You know, and when it got to the point where that the grandmother was supposed to be coming down here, I would at least give them a chance to come down here to do something for the child instead of trying to put them in the system. You know what I'm saying? If the system was not going to be fair towards them.
Okay. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we shall return with Ms. Braxton. Is Louisiana legally blind?
We'll be right back.
school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
All right, you guys, we are back here with Say Your Peace Radio Network, and we have Miss Eva Braxton of Louisiana here on the line, in which she's talking about the situation with her son, James Lamar Harris, who is incarcerated with Life Plus 20, who is also mentally disabled for the death of a baby that happened here locally. And we were talking about the young lady, the mother of the child, and the grandmother. She was kind of explaining to us what happened and why she didn't do certain things. So we're going to let her continue, and we're going to be wrapping it up in a few, okay? All right, Miss Braxton, we got you back on air here, and we're going to give you about 15 more minutes because it's getting late, and I know you need your rest. You've been exhausted because we have been working day and night, literally. Me and her have been on the phone 24/7 trying to come together and find some solutions to how we can handle this, and so far, there's a bright sunshine. Do you agree with me, Ms. Braxton, with this situation?
I sure do. And then, you know, I wanted to say another thing. The system itself failed children, too, because, you know, you have a lot of children that came out of abusive homes where that when they took them out the home and they put them back in there when they shouldn't have put them back in there, and the children died from things like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, you're right. You're correct with that.
You know,
right.
A lot of that have happened. You know, put them back into the danger that you take them out of. So, I'm one that don't believe in that type of stuff, and I feel like this has been a Christian and helping people and things. You know, I figure when you have done all that you can do, then it may be at a time where you can do that, because when people have other family members that can step in and things, I wouldn't think that the system would be the fastest and quickest thing to do when they have family members, because I feel that family members can step in and do things and plus pretty much would know a little more about the situation. So I would have gave the family chance to get her and things. And then when I found out that she was pregnant with my grandchild, you know, I knew that, okay, if she's going to refuse help, then I had to think about my granddaughter too. And I did not want her in the system, because when my grandchild was born, they would not let me see her. They were cruel and mean to us. My son took his check and spent it all on the baby and on the mother and stuff, and he enjoyed spending his money because he had him a baby, because everyone of his age had children, and he was the only one that didn't, and he was proud to take her around the neighborhood and take her out in her stroller and things that he had bought for her and stuff, you know, to see her mingle, and he would get other people to help him comb her hair and things and stuff, you know, and when the mother was pregnant, she just totally just was down, and her mother didn't even care about her being pregnant with that other baby. And the mother would say cruel things. I don't care about that baby, you know, and she's going to kill that baby and stuff and things and all that crazy stuff, you know, because the mother wasn't happy about her daughter being pregnant with the other baby and bringing in another mouth to feed in that abandoned store. So the baby was abused by the grandmother as well as the daughter, and that put fear in her. And when I called DCFS in Arkansas, that's where that happened at, and that's where it should have started at with the DCFS people. You know what I'm saying? because that was something they needed to look into. But by the mother using different addresses and things like that, that it was hard for them to catch them in that store. And then when that young lady told her mother she was not coming back to that store, I didn't blame her. But she did not say she would not return home. And by her grandmother being sick as well out of that store, I told her grandmother, because her grandmother was related to my great-grandparents, and say that I would look out for her because I remembered her and she remembered me. And I told her I would look out for her when she got ready to come back to Arkansas or Tennessee or whatever. I would bring her back. But, you know, when it came to the circumstances that the grandmother died and things changed where she couldn't go back, her dad was, said that he would step in.
And they
he didn't step in until afterwards.
So they didn't step in until after the death of the baby, is what you're saying?
Yes, exactly, exactly. You got 4 or 5 months of someone calling you to come down here to see about this baby because the baby's in bad condition and things, and then they figuring that I'm the one just making a big issue, a big fuss about it and things. Sometimes older people can see beyond what younger people can't see. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's
and when
true.
The baby needs the proper care, then someone older needs to step in. And things.
Yeah.
And his excuse would always be, well, my job, I can't take off of my job. I can't do this here. I can't do that. But then you wait until after your grandbaby died, and all of a sudden you take you take 8 hours to come down here or 7 hours to drive down here to pick your daughter up that showed no emotion about her baby being passed on or nothing like that. You know, that opened a can of worms with me.
Yeah.
Because my son cried like he's the mother, run after this baby out like he's the mother. You know, my son already had mental problems, and he suffered more mental issues about this baby because to him, that's his baby. She never got a chance to wear the shoes and stuff that he bought her, that he said she would look pretty in and things like that. He couldn't take her around and take her out to eat and take her to Chuck E. Cheese's and all that type of stuff.
The things that bothered him in the process, those are the things that bothered him?
It still bothered him. It still bothered him because he's afraid of dead things.
Yeah.
And he don't understand the thing about death, you know, and that hunts him to this day because he still don't understand what happened to this child, why his baby died. Because to him, you couldn't tell him that that was not his baby. In his mind, because of his mental disability, that's his baby. And the mother didn't even care. You know, she didn't even cry. She didn't show no remorse or anything. And we were all puzzled about that because when we asked her, did my son, did he do something to DJ? No, James didn't kill my baby. Well, why don't get upset. You know, we were just wondering, you know, because we know he wandered the streets a lot, you know what I'm saying? Maybe y'all could have been playing and wrestling around or something like that, y'all, like y'all be doing and things like that, you know, but she was very distinguished about, you know, my son didn't kill a baby. And my auntie was saying, well, you know, that's just something we would ask. And then we looking at each other like, you know, she was jealous of James and her, of the baby's relationship, because she figured that James spent more time with the baby by taking her out. Well, that she didn't want that baby out with James no more. He would be out all the time by himself. And when we see him, we would ask where she at and the baby. He said, don't want me.
So now we're at the point where we're at the aftermath. We're at the point where there's going to be an appeals process in place, right? We're at that.
That's already got started.
So now what we're doing is we're basically getting the story out, the basis of the story that we witnessed, me and you and your aunt, stood there and witnessed the judge actually saying that even though he didn't do it, somebody has got to pay because a baby is dead. If I'm not mistaken, that's what she said to us. Am I right?
Exactly. And even if, yes, even if it was a natural death because of her dying, you know, a child dying naturally, they still would pay the consequences for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're at the point where we're getting the story out, which we've done tonight, which is a great thing that we've done. We've gotten the information out. Our job now is to continue to talk and speak and get the basics, not the whole story, but the basis, the gut part of the story, that we now have a young man's life who's gone. It's gone unless, let me say, when I say gone, I'm talking about it's going to be wasted until the appeals go through. It's going to be wasted sitting in a cell, gave him life plus 20, and waiting for something to take place in order for him to be retried, if that's what they need to do, and for the evidence that was supposed to originally be presented this time, and for whoever made the most crucial, crazy mistake of putting this case together and the way they went about putting the case together, and you can feel in the courtroom the spirit of evil, you know it was not done correctly. So we're at the point now where the story has to be told. And me and Miss Braxton, and I'm going to do my best to get her to get the chunk of the story so that we can move it and make it so that it'll be easier for others to hear it. And we're working on that now. This right here was a ground point right here for us. And we're going to get on other shows, and we're going to talk about Louisiana. And I don't care what no one says. I am not proud of Louisiana at this moment in my life.
That's right.
I am not proud to know that I live here in a state that is so cruel to its own people, in the health care system and the welfare system and in the incarceration in the judicial and legal system. I am not a proud Louisianan. With that, Ms.
Rice,
want to give us some closing words, and I'm giving you words of encouragement. And you know, we talk all the time. I'm giving you a word of encouragement. Continue to do what you're doing and continue to fight for your son and continue to not only fight for him, but make him a martyr in a sense that others can step and get the same help that you're trying to give your son, that others will want to fall in your footsteps to help others. Because we've forgotten something when it comes to us as African-Americans, I'm not going to say Americans. I have issues with that word American, with black folks. We have ignored so many things, so many people, so for our own good. As long as it's not in my backyard, I don't care what's happening to the next person. So he shouldn't have done that. So he shouldn't have did this. And so the shoulda, coulda is gone now. A baby is dead. And two people are locked up.
Yes.
One is locked
up. And the bad part about it.
One is locked up wrong, and the other one should be locked up. So we're at a point now. We've got to move this out. The story has to come out. Some way, shape, form, or fashion, it has to come out. And we're going to do what we can to get it. So, Ms. Braxton, I want you to give us your last words. And you tell us what needs to be done from here right now.
What needs to be done is that more people need to step up, more people need to get together, and more people need to speak up about the way they're being treated. Because when they did my son's trial, it was the day when that storm came through here. Icicles all on trees, power lines are down, people power is all out, people don't have no way to get out, roads are closed down, and they down at the courthouse having a trial with no one down there but just us.
Yeah.
And their family members being the jewelry, kissing and hugging and patting each other on the back that they done put another black young man disabled in jail where that we were told not to tell anyone. Don't let no one know what we're doing down here or what's going on. You know, they didn't really want us to let them know that during a storm with everybody having power, running across the country, everybody going through this ice storm, power outages and things like that, and you down there, you all down there at the courthouse, when the courthouse is closed down, the judge and the prosecutor and the public defender all down there framing a young, innocent, disabled young man for the death of Alicia, and no one's there to even look into it or see because they want it done secretly. And everything they've done it secretly. And I'm just here to tell everyone, Louisiana needs to step up because without us, how can they function? They can't function without us.
Yep.
And if we continue to fall into their trap, so what? There's going to be a poverty time. We have to put trust in the Lord and things because if we don't do their work for them, who they going to get to do it? Because they got to pretty much educate the Mexicans because they don't know everything they sell. So, like I say, they need Louisiana need to all get together and speak up for our innocent young man, and we cannot allow them to do that because a lot of them are in that office that's old enough to be my kid that's doing this. And then you have some of these here judges that's younger than us that's pretty much these young folks up in there taking authority of the older people with them telling them what to do. And that's not fair because we have to stand up, we have to fight, we have to join hands together, and we have to stop fighting and killing each other because we are all family and we all came from one generation. So we have to join hands together and we have to fight this and stand up for what is right.
Exactly.
And that's what I have to say because you know what? I'm not from Louisiana. And I'm here to say, hey, Louisiana, I'm here to step up to the plate. And like I say, I'm not afraid of them because I don't have no fear of the enemy.
Exactly. So, Ms. Braxton, I want to thank you so much for joining us here today on Stay Your Peace Radio Network. You guys always know you're welcome to listen in. You can always go back and listen to this show again. Because, you know, as soon as it goes off, it's recorded, and it's set in my archive. So you can always go to Blog Talk Radio, Say Your Peace Radio Network, and you can listen to this story again. And I will be bringing it up again because we need this to be heard. I want to say thank you again, Ms. Braxton. You have a great evening, and I shall be talking to you, okay?
Thank you, Ms. McCall, and you have a great night, and I enjoyed the time you had with me. And we must do this again sometime.
Yes, we will. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, you guys, that was Ms. Eva Braxton. We're down to 9 minutes, man. Oh, man, great show. We're down to 9 minutes, but before we go, I want to make sure that I finish that article, talk a little bit more about Louisiana prison. And everything she just said, and if you were listening carefully, I hope you guys heard it very well. I don't have my Skype fixed up on my new computer. And me, I get very, very frustrated because I don't have it set up like I want to. I'm going to work on that more. Since I'm paying for it, I need to get it set up on here where I can work it better, and that's the only reason why I'm doing it by telephone. I usually, you know, do it by Skype, and I'm going to resolve that. We were talking earlier, prior to us talking with Ms. Braxton, bringing her on, we were talking about Louisiana incarceration, and there's a video that's on this website. You can't hear it right now, but it's on there. Matter of fact, I told you it's from NOLA. The website you can go to look at the video is NOLA.com. It's Crime Index. And it says Louisiana is the world's prisons. That's the name of the website. Very interesting article. I mean, I know people, you know, say what they want, but I'm not proud, and I say it again, and I'll continue to say it. I am not a proud Louisianan right now. It's amazing. Woo! It's amazing how things are. Now, the last time we were talking about how sheriff department, prosecutors, all of them are in the same bed together, and all of them are making these things happen. They all work together. They all get together and make these deals. I've been saying it for years that they get together at these barbecues and they hang out together. You know, some of our blacks, because I'll be honest with you, Mr. Crenshaw is an African-American, or I guess he is, and he just basically sold this man down the river. And we get up into this uppity mode of living, and we think we're better than everybody else, and we fall in with the ones who's creating this havoc on our lives. We've become part of the problem instead of the solution. Now, it says here, in early 1990s, when the incarceration rate was half what it is now, Louisiana was at the crossroads. Under a federal court order to reduce overcrowding, the state had two choices: lock up fewer people or build more prisons. It achieved the latter, not with new state prisons. There are no money for that, but by encouraging sheriffs to foot the construction bills in return for future profits. The financial incentives were so sweet that the corrections jobs so sought after that new prisons sprouted up all over rural Louisiana. Matter of fact, we have one locally called Pollock, but it's a federal penitentiary. It achieved the national prison population was expanding at a rapid clip. Louisiana grew even faster. There was no need to rein in the growth by keeping sentencing laws in line with those of other states or by putting minor offenders in alternative programs. The new sheriff's beds were ready and waiting. Overcrowding became a thing of the past, even as inmate population multiplied rapidly. If the sheriff hadn't built those extra spaces, we'd either have to go to the legislature and say, give us more money, or we'd have to reduce the sentences, made it easier to get parole and commutation, and get rid of the people who should have been here, said Richard Crane, former general counsel for the Louisiana Department of Corrections. Today, wardens make daily rounds of calls to other sheriff prisons in search of convicts to fill their beds. Urban areas such as New Orleans, Baton Rouge have an excess of sentenced criminals, while prisons in remote parishes must import inmates to survive. The more empty beds, the more operation sinks into the red. With maximum occupancy and a thrifty touch with expenses, a sheriff can divert the profits to his law enforcement arm, outfitting his deputies with new squad cars, guns, and laptops. Inmates spend months or years in 80-man dormitories with nothing to do and few educational opportunities before being released into society with $10 and a bus ticket. Now, you think about that, you guys. This is a very good article, and I will definitely be bringing this back. You guys, before we go, I got 3 minutes. I want to say thank you for listening in to Say Your Peace Radio Network with Salita McCall. And I want you guys to grab a hold, if you can, of my new book called Mighty Men of the Ministries, Inc. And I think I'll come back and talk about that too, because that story has a lot to it. And the reason why I wrote it, I need to get that out to my audience, my purpose behind the book. It's on Kindle right now and on Amazon. You guys, I guess I must be getting tired because my mouth is starting to. Anyway, it's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon. It's in ebooks only right now. And it's called Mighty, M-Y-T-E-E, Men of the Ministries, Inc. And you can get it at $3.99, which is not much, I mean, for an e-book. So you guys, I want you to take some time. I'll read it, review it, and blog it for me. Let me know what you think about it. And in the meantime, I'm going to say thank you guys for a great night, enlightening Sunday. I was just amazed, you know. And if I didn't know majority of the story already, I still was amazed at how things, you know, how things actually took place, how it played out the whole nine yards. It's something like you would read in a book. But I want to say thank you guys again, and you guys have a great night. Have a great week, and we will be back, I promise you, because it's too much out there that I need to keep silent. And just take care, if anything else. So this is Salita McCall sounding off with Say Your Peace Radio Network, and I want to say bye-bye.